to find bird feathers and think about what might have happened. Orange and white and black feathers. A lot of birds fit that definition. Red starts, orioles, robins. Yeah, I can think of a lot of birds that have feathers, those colors. Gray squirrel chasing a black squirrel. Now, gray squirrels and black squirrels are the same animals. They just have different colored hair. So a gray squirrel and a black squirrel can mate and have babies. Some of them may turn out to be gray. Some of them may turn out to be black, but they are the same basic squirrel. They are the same species of squirrel. So gray or black, it's still a gray squirrel. American toads, they're kind of fun to find. Spring fetchling flower, Timothy grass. That's the one with the big cigar-like seed head at the top. Horsetails, those are everywhere right now. That's Equisetum, and there are three or four or five or six, if you're careful observers, different species of horsetails. And one little child found a yellow flower called a ragwort. And those are very pretty little flowers and not altogether common. So we have one more report to cover and some other things that I want to get to, but that'll happen in the 45 minutes or so, around 7:45. So stay tuned for that.
And right. A couple of texts that came in, we'll get to those as well. Thank you for texting in this morning.
I've got some emails to cover that I want to talk about. So you are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Local news up next with the Up North Report. We are expecting showers and thunderstorms today, high 69 to 73. Southeast winds gusting up to 20, overnight 48 to 53 degrees.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. A 65-year-old Bemidji pedestrian died Sunday night after he was struck by a vehicle. The Beltrami County Sheriff's Office reported the man identified as Floyd Cloud was hit on Division Street Northwest, west of Bemidji in Grant Valley Township. The driver of the vehicle remained at the scene of the crash and fully cooperated with law enforcement. The Minnesota State Patrol responded and is assisting with the crash reconstruction. A 53-year-old Baxter man died after the motorcycle he was driving collided with a pickup truck early Thursday morning. Dennis Hyatt was traveling north on a Harley-Davidson cruiser on Highway 371, making a left turn on Pine Beach Road north of Baxter. A 56-year-old Baxter man was southbound in a Ford F-150. The vehicles collided in the intersection, and Hyatt died at the scene. The other driver was not injured. The Minnesota State Patrol reported the road was dry at the time of the crash, and Hyatt was not wearing a helmet. A federal judge has nullified six subpoenas issued back in January as part of a criminal investigation into whether Governor Tim Walz, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, and other state and city officials impeded federal immigration enforcement. The Minnesota Reformer reports that in an order unsealed on Monday, U.S. District Court Chief Judge Patrick Schiltz writes that the, quote, information sought in the subpoenas and any possible criminal violation range from extremely weak to non-existent. He also says it, quote, only adds to the overwhelming evidence that these subpoenas were not issued to investigate, but to harass, coerce, and retaliate. On January 20th, the Department of Justice issued the subpoenas, seeking a broad range of records related to immigration enforcement dating back to last January. Schiltz was appointed by President George W. Bush and is also a one-time clerk for the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Walz, in a statement, says the criminal investigation is another example of President Donald Trump investigating his political opponents. Frey says no one should be punished for questioning the actions of elected officials and that, quote, no community should be expected to accept harmful policies without objection. The U.S. Attorney's Office of Minnesota declined to comment to the Reformer about Schiltz's order and whether it intends to appeal it. The Schiltz order is another instance of federal judges wrapping the Trump administration on the knuckles this year. Schultz and his Minnesota colleagues accused the administration of repeatedly violating court orders to release immigration detainees. Judges also ordered the Trump administration to ensure proper access to counsel and freedom of worship at the Henry Whipple Federal Building, which is the state headquarters of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Changes to toughen the cancellation policy for Boundary Waters permits are in the works, and the public is invited to weigh in. The goal is to get unused permits back into the system faster by updating refund timing to encourage earlier cancellations. Those who canceled 28 days or more before a trip would get half of the deposit. Cancellations between 3 and 28 days would get 25% back, while those who canceled within 2 days would forfeit their deposits. The current cancellation policy allows people to be refunded fully, minus the $6 reservation fee, if they cancel 2 or more days ahead of time. The BWCA is managed with daily entry quotas from May through September, and those permits are released in January. Late cancellations and no-shows continue to climb. In 2025, nearly 40% of January on-sale reservations were never used, limiting timely access for others. If changes are approved, they would go into effect next January. People may comment through July 22nd at the Superior National Forest website by email or by mail. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has added 2 northern Minnesota counties to a deer feeding and attractant ban. The intent of the ban is to reduce the risk of chronic wasting disease spread following detections of CWD in wild deer in new areas of the state last year. Feeding deer encourages them to congregate, which can increase the likelihood of transmission if a deer is infected. The ban now extends to Becker and Clearwater counties. The other new counties are Grant, McLeod, and Meeker, making it a total of 37 included in the ban. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
Coming up, we'll have more news from National Public Radio. We'll bring you a little music as well. And John's phonology report. Some might describe that as music, John. Poetry in motion.
I heard someone once told me, your voice is so soothing. And I thought, my goodness, soothing isn't what I would call it. And I know my wife would not say soothing. My children would probably not say soothing either.
I know the people that really know you don't say
absolutely,
those things.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm familiar with that concept.
Well, you know, when I come in here in the morning and I'm pretty gassed and jacked up on nature, cup of coffee in my hands, why, I can be soothing. We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. More online at hottubsmn.com. And we receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in Northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
Coming up from Morning Edition, we have a story on a federal judge that has stymied Trump administration efforts to subpoena Minnesota critics of immigration enforcement actions, ruling the subpoenas were meant to harass political opponents. Stay tuned for that story, as well as an update on the New York primary races. Then we bring you more nature. We love getting your texts. We've got a bunch in that we will get to at about 7:45 this morning. Thanks for sending them to 218-326-1234.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C. In Minnesota, a federal judge threw out grand jury subpoenas from the Trump administration.
The judge said the subpoenas were used to harass, coerce, and retaliate against Minnesota officials who did not cooperate with the federal government's immigration policies.
Minnesota Public Radio's John Collins is with us now to tell us more about it. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the federal government issued 6 subpoenas. What did the government say they were looking for?
So they were looking for answers from some longtime opponents, including Governor Tim Walz and Attorney General Keith Ellison, as well as the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the counties where they're located. And the subpoenas came down during the height of the ICE surge into Minnesota, and that's where thousands were arrested and two American citizens were shot to death by federal agents. But essentially, the subpoenas were aimed at getting these Minnesota officials to hand over any information about their response to the federal government's immigration surge in Minnesota.
And what did the judge say in throwing them out?
The judge sided with Minnesota state and city officials who argued that these subpoenas violated their 10th Amendment rights, which says the federal government can't use its powers to compel or harass local governments into adopting certain federal policies. And that's exactly what the judge appears to think the Trump administration was trying to do here. And the judge in this case, Patrick Schiltz, noted the context that these subpoenas occurred in. They were issued right as President Trump threatened retribution against the state, and at a time when top officials in the Trump administration were also publicly pushing the state to cooperate more closely with federal immigration efforts or to face the consequences.
And did the judge say any more about how he came to this conclusion that the federal government overstepped its authority here?
The judge said harassing local and state officials is not an appropriate use of grand jury subpoenas. It's a misuse of a very powerful tool. But Judge Schiltz also said the federal government's assertion that these incredibly broad subpoenas had any clear purpose in a criminal investigation was absurd. He said none of the federal government's examples it cited justified the subpoenas. And he said it's clear that the goal of the subpoenas was instead to coerce Minnesota officials into assisting with the enforcement of federal civil immigration law and to harass and retaliate against them for failing to do so.
Have the Minnesota authorities responded to this?
Governor Tim Walz released a statement saying the decision is a, quote, victory for the rule of law and our democracy. And Walz said the use of grand jury subpoenas was just one more example of this federal administration's lawlessness. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey said it was a vindication of free speech, and he said criticizing the government is not a crime.
Is the federal government responding? And what, if you know, what could be next here?
The U.S. Department of Justice sent me a brief statement saying it takes the unlawful obstruction of federal law seriously and that it will continue to investigate. The judge here also took the step of saying he plans to unseal the grand jury testimony that led to these subpoenas, which is typically secret. He's given the federal government time to challenge it, but he said there's both a public interest and an interest by local governments in having these grand jury documents unsealed, and that could happen as soon as next month.
Well, those are actually some extraordinary developments there. That is John Collins of Minnesota Public Radio. John, thank you.
Thank you.
It's primary day in New York City today. It's also the biggest test of first-term Mayor Zoran Mamdani's electoral influence since his own win last year when the Democratic Socialists inspired thousands to support a political movement. Now, this year, he's trying to expand on it, going to bat in three Democratic congressional primaries. WNYC's senior politics reporter Bridget Bergen joins us now with more on what to watch for in today's race. So before we dig in, we're focusing on Democratic primaries here. Will any of these seats, Bridget, come into play in November?
No, these are deep, deep blue districts. So this really isn't about the balance of power in the U.S. House. The bigger story is about the future of the Democratic Party in New York City and, frankly, a beyond. Mayor Mamdani has become a national figure talking about the affordability crisis and is outspoken against Israel's actions in Gaza. Here's how Mamdani framed the stakes of this primary at a Get Out the Vote rally just last week in Brooklyn with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
The party of the past will not be what leads us into the future. For we need a Democratic Party with backbone. A Democratic Party that offers an affirmative agenda without apology.
Ultimately, Mamdani says his slate of endorsed candidates represents the kind of change the Democratic Party needs.
All right, so let's talk about his slate. First, he's backed a congressional candidate for one open seat.
Yes, that's to succeed retiring Congressmember Nydia Velazquez, the first Puerto Rican woman elected to the House back in 1992. Her district went big for Mamdani last year, and Mamdani endorsed first-term state assembly member Claire Valdez. She's a Democratic socialist, union organizer. Velazquez is backing Antonio Reynoso, the current Brooklyn Borough president. This race has really become a referendum over who controls the local Democratic Party, Mamdani versus Velazquez, the DSA movement versus progressive Democrats.
Are there any other DSA candidates running?
Yeah, in New York 13, Mamdani is backing 32-year-old Darielisa Avila Chevalier, who came to the Upper Manhattan and Bronx District to go to college about a decade ago. She's an Afro-Latina organizer, has led pro-Palestinian demonstrations at Columbia University. She's challenging Congressmember Adriano Espaillat, the first Dominican-American elected to Congress. He's 71, chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. She attacks Espaillat over taking AIPAC money, a pro-Israel lobbying group, and says he's out of touch with the real needs of their community. He's labeled her and the broader DSA movement as gentrifiers, forcing longstanding Black and brown residents out of their neighborhood.
And Mamdani endorsed another challenger against incumbent Congressman Dan Golden.
Yeah, that's in New York 10. Former mayoral candidate Brad Lander is running against Goldman, citing his past support of military funding for Israel. Now, both candidates are Jewish, but Lander's taken a harder line, calling Israel's action in Gaza a genocide. The Israeli government rejects those allegations and says its target is Hamas. Lander's also attacked Goldman for taking money from AIPAC and for spending a lot of his own money on the campaign. But Goldman has support from people like Governor Kathy Hochul, who calls him her go-to guy in Washington. But at this point, the race is leaning Lander.
All right, that's WNYC's Bridget Bergen in New York. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Coming up later today on All Things Considered, a tradition that you may not have heard of, but is more than 100 years old. The week before a wedding in a predominantly Italian-American neighborhood in Philadelphia, the groom-to-be sings to his bride in front of her parents' home. Hear more about that tradition later today on All Things Considered. This is NPR News.
Our next pick of 76 is Ry Cooder's fifth solo album, Chicken Skin Music. Sandwiched between a pair of Lead Belly covers are minstrel tunes done funky, an Appalachian traditional and Hawaiian slack guitar medley, and Norteño and Bolero versions of pop country songs. In particular, the Hawaiian and Tex-Mex influence is strong, with authentic Hawaiian guitar players Gabby Pahanui and Ada Isaacs, plus accordion legend Flaco Jimenez. Cooter's standing as one of the era's most sought-after session players gave him the freedom to pursue his eclectic and uncommon for the time music tastes in his own albums. Chicken Skin Music paved the way for the more eclectic side of roots and Americana, and showed that seemingly far apart genres are always more connected than you think.
Our music team bringing us the best of 76 and the other staff taking a look at the albums all throughout the years. We celebrate 50 years of KEXE.
Was that album from 1976?
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. I saw Ry Cooder play at the Guthrie and took my sister. She had never heard of Ry Cooder. And that was about that same time. Chicken yeah. Skin Music was one of my favorite albums. I actually bought the album, which is, in my entire life, I might have bought 20 albums.
Okay.
So I wasn't really throwing my money away on music. But that one struck me, and I think Malachi nailed it right there with his cover on that. It was a great album and a great bit of music. I enjoyed all the tunes on that album, so
yeah,
can't wait to hear more.
You can find out more at our website, kexe.org. Let us know what you think. That's John Latimer. I'm Heidi Holton. We're getting ready for John's full phonology report up next. And want to let you know that we're expecting, still got some nice sun out there, but highs 69 to 73, and we're expecting showers and thunderstorms to move in. Southeast winds gusting up to 20, overnight 48 to 53, continued rain and thunderstorms that'll continue into tomorrow as well. Mostly cloudy, highs in the mid-60s to low 70s, and by Thursday, sun, highs 72 to 75 degrees.
You know, thinking back to that last story and the little cover at the end about grooms going and singing to the family of their betrothed. Yeah, I'd still be a bachelor if that were the case. I would have been stoned out of a lot of front yards.
Yeah.
I don't have a voice for singing. I have a problem with carrying a tune. I have a problem with matching the vocal range, like,
sure,
you know, finding harmony and actually, you know, I well remember sing this note. No, that's not it. Try again.
So you were not in choir.
I was in choir once by accident, and I showed up the first day, and the teacher, God bless Mr. Oney, he had everybody singing, and then he said, you know, keep singing. And then he started walking down the row of boys that were in this row where I was, and he stopped in front of me, and then he looked at me and he said, stop the group. And he said, sing this note. And he sang a note, and, well, you know, would anybody, you know, should have been able to, like, yeah, I threw a stab at it. I didn't hit the note. At the end of class that day, Mr. Oney said that I might be better suited to study hall. So I'd already had that thought. I mean, I got in when I saw choir on my, you know, you get your schedule in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw choir on my schedule, I was like, really? Who did that? I would never sign up for choir. I can't sing.
Wow.
I still can't sing. That's all right.
It is.
I have other talents.
You sure do. I've been getting lots of texts in that we will get to at about 7:45. We've heard from Longville and Cotton and Wabana and Grand Rapids and Boston, people sending in photos and telling us what's going on. Thanks for that. Keep them coming. 218-326-1234.
Support comes from the Loft Events Center in downtown Bemidji, providing a multi-purpose event space that accommodates groups of all sizes, up to 150 people, for wedding receptions, business meetings, concerts, and more. Info about the Loft Events Center rates and packages at BemidjiLodge.com. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic, biological nature of events as they relate to climate. I've broken down my notes from this week into several groups. One group was flowers, and I broke them out by color. So if you're looking at yellow flowers this morning, those that grow right along the edge of the road and are really bright yellow, and if you got out and looked at them, you'd see that they look a little bit like a pea flower. Those are bird's foot trefoil. Early this morning and now until about noon, you may see a very large yellow flower, maybe 2 or 3 inches across, and that is goat's beard. What you probably will notice, it is that it has gone to seed in the last week or so, and the seed head looks like the seed head of a dandelion, except that it's the size of a baseball. So big, fluffy seed head, gray seed head, big as a baseball, that's goat's beard. But look for the flowers, and they bloom early in the morning. They're heliotropic, so they follow the sun. So they're going to be facing northeast when the sun comes up, and they're going to follow the sun until noon, and at noon, they're going to shut it all down. They're going to close up, and they'll wait till the next day before they open again. That's goat's beard. If you're kicking around in the woods or down the edge of a trail, you're probably seeing a lot of bush honeysuckle, which is opposite branched, and the flowers are little twin yellow flowers. So watch for those. The flowers are probably half to three quarters of an inch long, kind of tubular, and quite popular with insects for the nectar that is found at the base of that tube. That's bush honeysuckle. And if you're kicking around in the just in the grass in your yard, or if you're walking across a field or something like that, you might see some little tiny, like half inch yellow flowers, and those are probably cinquefoil. And you might have silvery cinquefoil. You might have rough cinquefoil. There's quite a few. There's five or six different species of cinquefoil, and three or four of them are yellow. And the ones that you're likely to see out in the field are probably silvery cinquefoil, kind of a shrubby down close to the ground, little yellow flowers, lots of them. And if you turn the leaf over, you're going to see the bottom of the leaf is quite white in color. Not exactly white, but much, much lighter than the top leaf. Those are kind of the yellow flowers that I've been seeing. In the white flower group, spreading dogbane. That has to be the one that is at the top of the list right now. This is a plant with red stems and bright green leaves. And these little bell-shaped flowers that are white streaked with pink. So it was hard for me to decide if this went with the pink ones, I mean the white ones, or the red ones. I put it in the white group because overall, when you look at them, you're going to be seeing bright red stems, bright green leaves, and kind of white-looking flowers. Now, spreading dogbane is one of the most popular flowers for butterflies, especially the monarchs and the eastern or the Canada tiger swallowtails. They are just flocking to those things. So that's spreading dogbane. White campion is in flower, four petals, has a big swollen seed pod called a calyx right behind the flower. That one is blooming quite profusely right now. Canada anemone, five petals, white flowers, big patches. If you see a patch of white with five petals that might be 15 or 20 feet long and 5 or 10 feet wide, that is probably Canada anemone. You remember talking about cinquefoil. If you're out walking in the fields, there are these clusters of little white flowers, tiny white flowers that are in these clusters that are about an inch to maybe an inch and a half in diameter. And these are at the tops of these long stalks, and that's hoary alyssum. Chickweed is also in the area, in the fields, going to have five petals, though it looks like 10. Each of the petals is divided almost to the base, and so it looks like 10 petals on this flower, but it's actually five. And as I said, each of the petals is split nearly to the base. That is... that's chickweed. And then down low in the woods, bunchberry, big white flowers, four petals, very short, 5, 6, 7 inches would be tall for them. And then, of course, I think the biggest eye-catching white flower right now is blackberry. And there are still a lot of blackberries in flower. The raspberries are still in flower as well. But the raspberry flowers never show off very much. They're kind of greenish, and you really have to look to see the raspberry flower. They are not at all like the blackberry flower, which is like eye-catching, big, inch and a half across, white. Yeah, you can't miss the blackberry. Among the red ones, and I include all the pink ones in there, and I mentioned it probably could put spreading dogbane in this category, but of the ones that I saw that are definitely red or pink, maiden pink, if you're lucky enough to be in an area where that plant grows, it is a five-petaled, bright pink flower. I mean, this one is shocking pink. It is really, really, really pink. So... check that one out. Canada Columbine, of course, we all know that one. We probably, most of us call it honeysuckle, but it's actually a columbine, and it is red, and it is in profuse bloom right now. Red clover just began to bloom this last week. Saw my first red clover about a week ago. That, of course, is kind of pinkish red. And then finally, a little plant called Shepherd's Purse. And the reason I include Shepherd's Purse, even though Shepherd's Purse has a white flower, when it goes to seed, it has these little, well, almost heart-shaped seed pods. And those are the Shepherd's Purse. And they turn quite red. So if you're driving by looking out at a field of hay or something like that, and you see these big patches of red in there, chances are you're dealing with Shepherd's Purse. It's not the flower itself, pretty unnoticeable. it's nothing. It's little white flowers kind of on this tall stalk. But when it begins to crank out its seeds, it really gets quite beautiful. That's Shepherd's Purse. Among the blue flowers, blue-eyed grass and blue flag iris are both in bloom right now. So check out those. Blue-eyed grass is going to be, I find it in the most unusual places. Usually it's sometimes it's along the edges of roads. Sometimes I found some in the center of my, I have a tote road, an old logging road. And the grass that grew in the center of that road, it was growing in there. It grows out in an old pasture that I live near, and I find it here and there among the grasses in the pasture, the blue-eyed grass. Five petals, bright blue, deep blue, bright yellow center on the blue-eyed grass. And the blue flag, the wild iris, everybody recognizes iris, and they are just definitely in full bloom right now. Another category that I grouped together are those plants that produce berries. And this year has been an amazing year for berries. I will wait to see how many of them develop and ripen. But just to give you a list, there are berries present on raspberry. There are berries present on blackberry. Chokeberry, not chokecherry, but chokeberry, has a good crop of berries on it. Sarsaparilla has a good crop of berries coming. Nannyberry has a good crop of berries. Nannyberry is one of those, it's a bit like the dogwoods. You get, 50 to 75 flowers in a cluster, but of those, you'll get three or four maybe that turn out to have fruits. And so you'll have a cluster of 50 to 100 flowers, and only three or four of them will actually develop fruits. But this year, the nannyberry, I would say it's more like, of the 100, it's probably like 15 to 20 are developing fruits. So there's a good crop of nannyberries coming along. Juneberries, my juneberry plants are just freighted with green berries right now. And, of course, the juneberries, when they start getting ripe, it's like one berry at a time. And unless you're out there picking that ripe berry and saving it, the robins and the white-throated sparrows are going to come in there and eat those juneberries before you even get a chance to taste one. So when you see juneberries ripe, grab some. And they should be ripe, first part of July, maybe after the 4th of July. Chokecherry. Lots of fruits on the chokecherries. Pin cherries, I haven't seen as many pin cherries on my tree as I have this year in a long time. It's been a long time since I've really seen this kind of production. I don't know if any of these will get through to the other side. Blueberries could be added to that list. Lots of fruits developing. How many of them will come out the other side as ripe fruits remains to be seen. But it bodes well for birds and bears. They will all have plenty to eat if those things come through. Speaking of birds and bears, the oaks, the red oaks and the bur oaks are both putting out acorns right now. The Red Oak, it's a two-year process, so the acorns that are developing that you can see now on the red oaks are last year's acorns. You can see this year's acorns too, but they're really, really, really small, and they're going to be further out the branch. The bur oak acorns, I had to pull down a branch and look carefully, and the bur oak acorns aren't yet a quarter of an inch across. They're tiny, and they're just beginning, but it looks like there's going to be a good crop of bur oaks. If all those acorns that I did see come ripe, it will be a good year for bur oak acorns as well. And the bur oak is the white oak, and that's the one that all the animals prefer. Less tannins, more nutrients, just a better eating acorn than the red oak acorn. So we'll be watching those to see that what happens there. Northern holly, black alder it's called, is right now, it has hundreds of flower buds, but no flowers yet. And I'll be watching for that one. That's the one that has the red berries in the fall. And you can pick some of those come fall and bring them in the house, and all the leaves will fall off, and then all the berries will fall off. I have better luck if I leave them outside, cut them off, put them in a dry vase, and just leave them outside. They seem to hold on better out there. Couple of notes about butterflies and moths. Pardon me. This past week, I saw white admiral, I saw mourning cloaks, I saw monarchs, I saw tiger swallowtails, lots of all of those, and I saw a cecropia moth, and the cecropia moth is one of our largest moths, and some of the females of the cecropia group can have 5 to 7 inch wingspan. That's as big as a bird. The really interesting part about the cecropia moth is that the body, the wings are brown. They have these startling white and red sort of patterns on them. But the really amazing thing about the cecropia moth is the body and the legs. And if you look at the body and the legs, you'll see that they're striped red and white and just really astonishingly brilliant and very, very cool to look at. Now, the cecropia moths are out now, but will be disappearing very soon. They are May and June, and then they're done. They'll lay their eggs, and those eggs will become caterpillars, and those caterpillars will overwinter. And the cecropia moths will emerge again next spring. The interesting thing about the cecropia moth is that, as an adult, it has no mouth parts. All of its energy comes from whatever it ate as a caterpillar. When it becomes an adult moth, it has no mouth parts to eat with. It lives for about a week and breeds and lays eggs on maples, cherry, birch, those kinds of trees. And then the caterpillars will munch away until fall, and then they'll make a cocoon, and they will pupate during that winter and come out in the other side as the beautiful cecropia moth. And finally, monarchs. And I got a call, I got a text from Dr. Ed up in Big Fork, and he wondered, he had been watching the monarchs, and he noticed that occasionally one monarch butterfly would attack and grab another monarch butterfly, and then they would sort of fight and struggle in the air and then fall to the ground or fall to a branch somewhere. And he wondered who was whom in that fight. And it works out like this. The male monarchs, when they find a female, they will grapple with her. They will fly out and grab her in the air, and they will grapple with her and fall to the ground. And oftentimes, They'll chase this female around, and while they're doing this, they're sort of assessing the female's fitness for mating. And once they have established that this female is fit for mating, they will grapple with her, and they will fall to the ground. The two will join at the abdomen, and he will pass to her a packet of not only his sperm, but a bunch of nutrients as well. And the bigger his dowry, the stronger it makes the female. And the stronger she is, the better chance of survival she has and her offspring have. So this grappling that you see is a male picking a female after some flight and some assessment of her abilities. And then he gives up a great deal. He gives up like 25% of his energy when he mates with her. And that usually results in his not too imminent death, but he dies shortly after that. And she goes on to lay her eggs, and then she dies. So a little story about the monarchs this morning. I hope that you are getting outside and observing the monarchs and enjoying them. Final note, I guess I wanted to end there, but I'd forgotten that I wanted to mention turtles. And I mentioned that I had two that came up in my yard last night and were laying eggs. But overall, the number of turtles that I'm seeing this year are down. And I guess what I'm curious about is, are you seeing fewer turtles than you might have had in the past? So if you are, whatever, if you have lots of turtles or if you have no turtles, let me know. Send us a text and let me know what's going on in your yard, because Dallas Hudson and I are kind of concerned about the number of turtles we're seeing. We aren't seeing as many as we're used to. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back next week.
It is 7:40. Coming up next, we'll bring you best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. Showers and thunderstorms are likely today with highs 69 to 73, southeast winds 5 to 10, gusting up to 20, overnight lows tonight 48 to 53, continued rain and thunderstorms, southeast winds gusting up to 15 to 20 miles an hour, and showers and thunderstorms continuing tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs in the mid-60s to low 70s. We'll see sun by Thursday, 72 to 75, although we are seeing sun right now in Grand Rapids. Our current temperature is 58 degrees, 64 in Brainerd, 55 in Hibbing, 58 in Bemidji, Aiken reporting 60, and Bagley at 57 right now.
It is time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. And for today, June 23rd, we have a couple of anniversaries. Pat and Carla McKenzie are celebrating their 42nd anniversary in Eveleth. Congratulations. Bill and Peggy Marshall are celebrating an anniversary here in Grand Rapids. And we have a couple of birthdays as well. Heidi?
Jackie Welly, happy 63rd to you from Bemidji. And Steve Ewens is 75 from Cohasset. We're going to play some music now from an album that came out called B.B. King's Blues Summit 100. And it was put together by Joe Bonamassa to the late B.B. King in honor of what would be his 100th birthday.
Hanging around my house when I'm not at home. Yes, I don't want you answering the door now. You are all alone. I don't want your sister coming by. You know the little girl talked too damn much. If she really wanna visit you, baby, tell her to see you someday at your church. 'Cause I don't want a soul around.
when I'm not at home. I don't want you to answer the door now, baby, when you're home and you are home. I don't want your mama coming by till I get home about the break of day. It's too late to visit anybody, baby. Tell her to please stay the hell away. Cause I don't want a soul, baby, hanging around my house when I'm not. Sick now, babe, but you home all alone. I don't want the doctor at my house now, baby. You got to suffer till I get home. Cause I don't want a soul hanging around my house, but I'm not at home.
Well, you know that was a dedication to you, John.
I do like the blues. Yeah, that makes me feel better.
That was featuring Marcus King, called Don't Answer the Door, a tribute to what would be B.B. King's 100th birthday, an album put together by Joe Bonamassa with lots of artists like Buddy Guy and Gary Clark Jr. and Larkin Poe and so many more on here.
Yeah, nice piece. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Nice to have some nice to have some blues in the morning. That suits me just fine. It is time to go back to our talkbacks and our emails and our what do we call those things? Texts.
Texts. We got a lot of texts coming in.
Well, we better jump right in then. I wanted to start by mentioning that funding for Phenology Talkbacks is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, and our talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. Our final report this week comes from Chad Caddett's students and staff at Little Falls Middle School, continuing reporting over the summer through their Instagram page. You can find them at Little Falls Phenology, and you underscore, let's little underscore falls underscore phenology, and that will get you there, and you can see there photos of a mating monarch pair. We talked about that. Inky cap mushrooms, club-tailed dragonfly, army worm larvae, and Io moth. The Io moth is almost as beautiful as the Cecropia. The Io is yellow, and it has these giant eye spots on its back, on its hind wings. It is a, I don't see very many, but I'll tell you what, if you happen to run into one of these 4-inch wingspan, you're going to remember the Io moth if you get a chance to see it.
It almost looks like a bird. Some of those moths look like a bird to me,
right?
Not a moth.
Yeah. And, yeah, and the idea is that when they're under attack, if there's something coming, they'll spread their forewings and expose those two eye spots, and it can look like the face of a cat or something, you know. That
oh,
just,
my gosh.
So, like, if you're a bird and you're coming in thinking, oh, I love the taste of these moths, and suddenly the wings open up and you see these eyes, these bright blue eyes, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, wait a minute, what is that? Is that a cat? Maybe I don't want to eat that. So, yeah, the eye,
wow.
Well, all, not all, but many, many, many moths have big eye spots on their hind wings, and the
not reason, actual eyes, it's eye spots.
Yeah, there,
okay,
there's no vision associated with those things other than the vision of someone coming in looking at it,
wow,
and going, oh my God, that thing's way bigger than I thought. I thought it was a little moth, but that thing's got a 4-inch head on it, and it's got two great big eyes, and it's looking right at me. I better change my attack here. So an Io moth, turkey tail fungus, Crinopelis setipes, Crinopelis setipes mushrooms, a sawfly larva, a daisy, and a yellow jacket wasp, all on their Instagram page. And then we got a great photo from Don. It said, Don had a great photo of a Canada tiger swallowtail, and one of the responses said, don't let the hawkweed spread. Oh, yeah. It's nearly impossible to get rid of. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they look sort of pretty, but that hawkweed is no good,
that's,
right?
That's the orange hawkweed that the tiger swallowtail is coming to. Yeah, it is a bane to farmers. The cows don't like eating the hay that has that in there. Those plants are very, very hairy, and cows just do not like them.
And Steve had this amazing photo of a cedar waxwing,
yes,
early light in Bemidji. And
yep,
I just, that's one of those, you know, sometimes those birds, they call themselves something like they have a color, but they're not actually that color. Like,
right.
It drives me nuts. But these cedar waxwings, to me, it looks like it's carved out of wax.
They are absolutely something, the sleekest looking birds.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that subtle yellow at the lower part of, mm-hmm, the breast there? That is astonishing. And then, of course, on the wingtips, they have like a little exudate. And in the cedar waxwings, it's mostly yellow. But in the Bohemian waxwings, you'll have red and yellow. And it is, I've forgotten now, keratin or something that they,
oh, sure,
actually weeps out of the feather and forms this little dot of color at the ends of the feathers on the wings and tail. So,
and looking at the head of the cedar waxwing, it's like that's punk rock at the top.
Yeah,
it's got a mask on and then this cool like mohawk.
Right,
sticking
right
out. So,
yeah,
very cool. Check out the Season Watch Facebook page for lots of photos, or that's a great place if you have questions. Or you can text us. There's lots of things coming in on our text line at 218-326-1234.
Yes, we got a picture. You showed me a picture of a tree.
Yeah, we heard from Longville this morning, and they want to know what's going on with their red tree. They also sent some beautiful photos of lady slippers, and they say, thank you for being there. So,
yeah,
you.
Well, thank you for sharing your stuff with us. I don't know what's going on with that tree. I looked carefully. The branching of the tree did not look like maple, although the leaves looked like early maple. If you come out, when the leaves first emerge, they're quite red on the maple. That's the anthocyanin that is the sunblock, and it ultimately gets overwhelmed by the chlorophyll, which is turning the carbon dioxide into sugar through sunlight, and so that chlorophyll is green and it covers up the red until fall, when the tree pulls back the chlorophyll to save it for next year, and the colors that are already in the leaf, like the anthocyanins, will start to shine through. So I don't know if that's the case.
We have some of our spruce trees that have, you know, vines growing.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a vine, not part of the tree or something?
You know, that might be, but a woodbine, which would be one of the vines that would grow up a tree like that, is bright green from the start. It turns red in the fall.
Okay.
But this does not look like a healthy tree.
No.
This looks like a tree that is probably destined to the firewood pile.
Well, it looks kind of lonely out there. Just like one little shock of red leaves and then a sparse tree without anything else on it. We heard from Bill in Wabana via text. He said, my lady slipper is blooming. There are at least four more flowers that are left to bloom. And he got some great close-up photos of that.
Is it the showy or the pink?
Pink. Well, I don't know. I mean, it is pink.
Are the sepals, the three pieces that stick out, are they white or are they greenish brown?
You know, I can't see that.
Well, you look at the slipper.
Yeah.
And there should be three. There should be something up above the slipper. What color is that?
White.
So, yeah, that would be a showy lady slipper.
Okay.
Yep.
I thought you were...
The orchids are complex, and the slipper orchids have these three sepals that turn, in the case of the pink lady slipper, the sepals would be green flecked with brown. In the case of the yellow lady slipper, they're greenish brown, unless it is the little tiny one, the one they call Mackeson. And if it's the Mackeson yellow lady slipper, it will have mahogany colored sepals, but the showy lady slipper has white sepals. So those three tendrils that sort of stick out around the flower, if they are white, you're looking at showy lady slippers. Go ahead.
We got a text in, speaking of lady slippers, we got a text in from Laura Z, said made a visit to a bog outside of Grand Rapids. It was so lush. I saw my first pitcher plant in bloom and my first pink lady slipper, and she's got some beautiful, beautiful photos coming in via text. Thank you for that, Laura. We also heard from Liberty from Faustin. Hi, Liberty. Saying, Faustin has a healthy population of white gray squirrels. They're not albino. They've made the front page of our newspaper, and as I was trying to find the picture of five of them in a tree to send you, I looked over and I saw this little friend. Always makes my day when I see one. She's got some great photos of just up on its haunches, a white squirrel there.
And Sharon Miller sent me a text or an email saying, we saw this albino squirrel at 6 a.m. this morning on East Gull Lake. Hmm. We've been here for over 20 years, and this is the first albino we've seen. Now, the true albino will have pink eyes.
Oh, okay.
But whether or not, no picture associated, so I don't know if there is a something there that would tell me that it was an albino. I know that gray squirrels seem to have this ability to sort of have different colors, gray, white, and black. And when you think about it, white and black together make gray. So maybe that's where it all started. I don't know.
Could be. We heard from our friend Susan from Cotton saying, we happily helped two snapping turtles off roads this week. And I also saw our first garter snake of the year in our yard. Chico, that's her dog, and I also met a leopard frog on the trail. Chico was unimpressed. And a quick add to my note, the turtles we rescued were in Independence and in Cotton. We are seeing our big snapper that likes to sun on the rock about 200 yards downriver from us on the Whiteface River, but otherwise don't feel as if we are seeing many either.
All right. Well, we will have to just hold our fire on that one and see. But if you have turtles in your area, by all means, let us know. Send us pictures. We'd want to keep track and get an idea of how many are there are around. Got a note from Joel down in Mattawa. He said, so far, month of June, the total is 2.78 inches of rain. He's got an inch more than I have. Given tomorrow's forecast, I expect June rainfall may exceed the monthly average here, which is 4.81. Our average, let's see, pattern must be somewhat different here for meteorological summer. Our average is 13.59 inches, and in the 20 to 25 period, 2020 and 2024, were above average. 21, 22, 23, and 25 were below average for rainfall. Thanks, Joel. Always love to hear from Joel. Got lots of things to do and see down his way, and he passes that along to us. Thanks so much.
We also would love to hear from you. What